of different policies that could do that within our organization. But what we really truly believe is that the American people know that these solutions are out there and ready, and we are looking to the American people to provide the leadership on these solutions because they're not coming from our politicians.
What should people do?
Well, I'm glad you asked. we're launching a new campaign, and it's called the Future Power Plan. And it's to build the people power necessary that can create the political will to shift the way that we power our society and protect our planet for future generations. If you want to find out more, you can visit our website at usclimateplan.org, where you can get involved and join our first training call.
Is there anything else you'd like to say to our listeners about all this?
Well, the only reason that the president vetoed this pipeline today is because grassroots activists and popular movements have brought him to this point. And now it looks like he's likely to reject this controversial project for good. So what this really shows is what's possible when people come together and draw a line in the sand. But now what we need to do is make it clear that this is much bigger than just a single pipeline and really call for the transformative change that'll move us forward into the future. And together, if we continue to rally around the bold solutions that will lead us forward, we can do that.
All right. Evan Weber, thank you so very much.
Thank you, Doug.
This is Doug McVeigh with KBOO News.
Hey there, listeners. Up next, we have Out Loud. It's 6 o'clock p.m., February 24th. You're listening to KBOO Portland. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by a KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Clackamas Community College Theater presenting The Laramie Project, a stage production based on extensive interviews of citizens of Laramie, Wyoming, in the aftermath of the murder of Matthew Shepard in 1998. The Laramie Project runs from February 26th through March 8th at the Osterman Theater, and ticket information is available at clackamas.edu/theater or by calling 503-594-3153.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Becoming Dr. Ruth, produced by Triangle Theater. Starting February 5th through the 28th at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza at 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. Becoming Dr. Ruth tells the story of the outrageous and iconic Dr. Ruth Westheimer and the journey she took from fleeing the Nazis to her struggle as a single mother to coming to America and becoming a renowned sex therapist. Again, that's Becoming Dr. Ruth, produced by Triangle Productions, from February 5th through the 28th at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is one of the local co-sponsors of the Economics of Happiness Conference, Friday evening, February 27th to Sunday, March 1st in Portland. The conference is a place to connect with the global localization movement, communities challenging dominant systems of power as they build more sustainable and resilient social and economic relationships. The program will include plenaries, panels, interactive workshops, and other participatory sessions. International, national, and local activists will mix and share projects and experiences. Speakers will include conference co-founder Helena Norberg-Hodge, Jerry Mander, and Charles Eisenstein. Again, that's the Economics of Happiness Conference next weekend, February 27 to March 1st, at the Elliott Center, 1211 Southwest Main Street in downtown Portland. More information can be found at localfutures.org or our own website, kboo.fm, on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or radiocab.net.
Welcome to Out Loud, dear listeners. Thanks for tuning in tonight. We have some great folks with us. First up, we're going to visit here with Jason Myers and Anthony Hudson, who are creators and hostess of The Hiding Place. A little bit later, we're going to hear from we're going to have some of Portland's fabulous trans youth come in and talk about their experience in the city. Before we get started, I want to mention that let's see, we're going to visit with folks from Wild Planet, our new queer radio station in Portland next week. They're going to be here next Tuesday evening to tell us what's happening on Wild Planet. They're going to have a pre-launch party on Thursday at Q Center. So they wanted us to let you know about that. But also happening this Thursday, The Hiding Place. Welcome, Anthony.
Hi.
Welcome, Jason.
Hi.
Thanks for being here. All right, so we're talking about The Hiding Place, coming out and coming of age in the shadow of oppression, a queer storytelling tribute to the diary of Anne Frank. Now, you're doing this storytelling event at the Oregon Jewish Museum.
Yes.
In Northwest. I used to volunteer there years ago.
Really?
We're counting up artifacts, hundreds of making little diary entries of everything that had been donated over the years.
Oh, wow.
Extremely tedious and a lot of fun, though. There was a lot of, a lot of story behind everything. So,
well, as long as we're talking about the Oregon Jewish Museum, I want to thank them from the bottom of my heart for being as inclusive and fearless to let us hold space for the queer community in this way around this exhibit. It's part of the programming for the Anne Frank History for Today exhibit that's there. I think it's through April.
It's amazing.
It is amazing.
It's only the third time it's been in Portland, I think.
I think it comes every 20 years or so-ish. So, yeah, that would make sense. 60 years.
Look at you adding and subtracting.
12 years of college, you guys.
let me give the address for the Jewish Museum before we get further into this. 1953 Northwest Kearney. Used to be down in Old Town. So they moved out there and got a bigger space, and they do some really great programming now.
They certainly do.
Yeah, they've been wonderful to work with every step of the way, letting us come in and see the space, see the exhibit. We're actually throwing the show. It was Jason's idea. They have a beautiful old auditorium in the museum, and it used to be an old film screening room for like old Hollywood moguls that would hang out in Portland in like the 20s.
The original Paramount Studios or Columbia Studios or some crazy stuff.
So they wanted us to have the show in there, but Jason had this amazing idea of us actually putting on this performance in the Anne Frank exhibit itself.
Yeah, well, I don't know if it was my idea or my friend Sandra, who's the education coordinator at the museum. Mm-hmm. Regardless, I think we all felt that it would be much more exciting to hold it in the exhibit itself, and with a lot more potential for it to have a little bit more of a ceremonial edge, which, I mean, since we're really pulling together five or six testimonies and stories from the gay community that interact with Anne Frank's diary in some way, in a way that makes sense for our lives today. So to be able to like hold space for these really simple stories inside the exhibit itself, I think is really beautiful and really bold for them to allow us to do that. And
yeah,
I'm really, really grateful for their trust in us, I think.
They've been so trusting every step of the way.
And super easy to work with. I can't speak enough for that, for the museum and the people that work there. And yeah, their fearlessness with like letting us do that, do this show there, because I think it's going to be beautiful.
What's your sense of the exhibit itself that's at the museum?
Well, I just got back from Amsterdam last week, where I went to the Anne Frank House and there are two organizations that this exhibit comes from. One is the Anne Frank House in Amsterdam and the Anne Frank Center in New York City. I think this exhibit comes from the Anne Frank Center in New York City, but they're obviously aligned in mission and in the way they curate this exhibit. And the exhibit is beautiful. It's very simplified. And having just came back from Amsterdam, which was a really emotional experience to actually see the house and see the space where this legacy really came from, I think both the museum in Amsterdam and the museum in Anne Frank are doing a really amazing job to keep it relevant to audiences and students and the public of today. Because Anne Frank kind of feels like a myth for a lot of people. And I think nobody wants to sanctify her or make her into this saint, even though the power of this document goes so far beyond anything she had any intention of. I think it's really beautiful for these organizations to be carrying the mission of this document, and it means a lot for me to my feelings about history and memory and why I perform and do theater in general. That might be a little bit all over the map, but that's my experience of the exhibit.
It's really fantastic. Everybody knows who Anne Frank is, but if you walked in there with absolutely no awareness, you'd have it all fleshed out for you. There's so many photographs and kind of like infographics that just spell out everything for you and what was happening all around the world at the same time. And they have collections of all these different editions of her diary, like facsimiles of her original diary. It's really powerful stuff. And I think when we do this show in there, I think there's going to be a really special energy that's flowing through the whole space. It's going to be very haunting and rich.
And tender.
Tender. Yes.
I do. I really think that the predominant energy in the room, I'm steering this project towards is for that room to be full of compassion and and permission and support for the storytellers, for Carla and her talented pianist,
Maria,
for all of us, because it's really frightening to be doing this short story framed literally by images of the Holocaust. And I think, as serious as that is, we want to have a loving, defiant, heart-centered toast to this diary in light of all of that, in our own way, in ways that affect our lives very real ways today as gay people.
So tell us about the event itself. What are you planning?
Haven't thought of that.
we're gonna go have a beer and figure that out after this.
The burger place up the street.
Yeah.
Well, Jason came. It was interesting because I first came on to this show, I think in October, when I was working on my one woman show, Carla Rossi Sings the End of the World, which was Carla telling us all about her time in Weimar, Germany in the 1920s and 1930s. And Jason came up to me and he said, "Hey, you're doing this thing with Germany and storytelling and songs, and I'd love to have you bring some of that into this show that I'm working on with the Jewish Museum." And I'm thinking, okay, I'm intrigued. I want to hear more. And as time went on and Jason's been developing this. He's put together like five
storytellers,
all from different aspects of the LGBTQ community, and they're all going to be kind of talking about different things that we can all relate to within the kind of subject matter, hiding, coming out as survival, masks. That's where Carla comes in, masks, because she's one terrifying one. And Carla will be acting as the hostess for the evening. So she'll be emceeing, because we're approaching this as a cabaret, but a storytelling cabaret. And Carla is kind of the glue that patches some of it together while also having a nervous breakdown at the same time, because as she tends to do. So it'll be a lot of fun. Me and my pianist, Maria Choban, have been rehearsing like crazy, and we're kind of approaching this as a sequel to Carla Rossi Sings the End of the World, because the subject matter is so, I mean, it really is intense. And when I first went into the exhibit and talked with Jason about this, and we met a 90-year-old Holocaust survivor of Auschwitz, it's so real and so present and still so close in memory and time that we both know that we have to be really careful with what we do and considerate and thoughtful. And it's really exciting, I think, to see the amount of work that we all have taken that will come to life in this on Thursday.
Yes, and the storytellers that are going to be participating on Thursday, they're, with the exception of one person, they've all told stories with me at other shows, other storytelling shows that I do, which is why I even have the opportunity to do this. So I've kind of, instead of going out and seeking really top-notch writers and top of their field artists, although we're all
thanks.
At the top of
thank
our...
Thank you.
Oh,
thank
God.
You.
Oh, I knew you were going to do that. I really like to think of the setup of the storytellers as being ceremonial or like as a family. The stories themselves aren't important. What is important is the bravery of them to share their truths around this material, which is really scary. And I can tell you who the storytellers are.
Oh, yeah.
Please.
Yeah, that's because literally we do know what's going to happen on Thursday. That was a joke. we have David Weissman, who's telling a story. He's a really successful documentary filmmaker in town.
One of my favorites.
Yes, we have Nick Matos, who used to write for PQ Monthly and writes freelance and does a lot of exciting projects on his own. We have Sally Mulligan, who is a fashion correspondent and a comedian in town, who's also I've worked with in a lot of really sweet ways, and she's amazing. We have Sister Brittany,
oh.
who is also a comedian and a writer, who's also really exciting and vibrant and sassy.
She's like, she's kind of like a socially just Sam Kinison for today, I feel like.
She's kind of a preacher of sorts. I really think of her as a preacher. And we also have a lovely gentleman named Patrick Cornelius, who spoke at my last Dark Night of the Soul, the late Bloomers edition, and he has a really powerful story that I'm excited for our friends to hear on Thursday. And that's it.
I once wrote Nick Matos a fan letter.
Tiger Beat magazine.
he writes a lot about grief. That's a really common subject matter for him, and something that I think doesn't get talked about enough, not nearly enough.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a feeling that we tend to consider to be very private when. There are so many kinds of communal grief, and so I've always had a lot of respect for his desire to put his own sense of the different forms of grieving that he experiences into words and to share them.
Yes,
yeah, it's always very open and honest. Yes, I think the lineup is spectacular, and seeing so many from varieties of disciplines too, of filmmakers, comedians, authors. It's really exciting stuff.
All right, where can we find the Hiding Place? We're going to be at the Oregon Jewish Museum Thursday.
Thursday at
7:30. Doors at 7. Mm-hmm. We're going to start the show at 7:30-ish, but I don't like waiting a long time, so by 7:45, the show will be going.
I'll be asleep in the dumpster behind.
I'll be waking Carl up in the dressing room, pounding on the door.
And we're so excited. We actually have a sponsor.
We do. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Look at the good idea.
I know. I can't thank Ivan Dollar Hair Studio enough. He's sponsoring this show with the help of Oregon Jewish Museum. But he's been a huge help for putting this together and making us, letting us get to the next level with it. So I can't thank Ivan Dollar and his hair studio enough. www.ivandollar.com.
I'm going to come up with a jingle in the show for him.
Oh, please, please.
It could come out as a giant... toupee, some scissors, and it'll be cute.
No toupees. He doesn't like toupees, I don't think.
Oh, really? Can you imagine Carla with a toupee, though?
Ooh.
That'll be my look. Really excited.
I think I like it.
Thanks. Where can folks find tickets?
Oh, they can find tickets on the Oregon Jewish Museum and Center for Holocaust Education's website, which is www.ojmche.org.
Yes. OJMCHE.org.
Yeah.
And Jason, your production company and website.
Yes, my production company, Home Theater System, is hometheaterpdx.com. There's a link to the ticket website on my website if you want to visit us over there. That's cool too.
Yay.
Yay. Wonderful. So Thursday evening, 7:30, we're going to be seeing The Hiding Place and hearing these great stories. Thank you so much, Jason.
Thank you, Alan.
And Anthony.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely. We're going to hear some music, and we'll be back.
drop.
Welcome back to Out Loud. Thank you so much, Boston, for supplying us with some music for a break and for being in the control room and making Out Loud happen tonight and many weeks of the year. And thanks to Anthony and Jason, check out The Hiding Place, hometheaterpdx.com. That's Thursday evening at the Oregon Jewish Museum. We have some great, great folks here tonight. We're going to start with Layla.
Hi, my name is Layla Hofstein. I use she and her, and I'm the youth coordinator for Portland PFLAG Black Chapter, which means I have the best job in the city. I get to run around helping find youth like that we have here today, getting their lives together.
Wonderful. And just as a side note, we're glad to hear that PFLAG Black Chapter will be welcome at the Ambridge Center for the 6th anniversary celebration in April. Is that right? April,
yes.
Yeah, so that's that was a nice turnaround, and they were quick and quick and good about it. So, very nice. So,
All right. So we're here today with a couple of really fabulous youth. I'll let them introduce themselves. If you want to start over here with Rihanna.
Sure. My name is Rihanna. I use she, her, hers pronouns, and I guess in general, I'm an advocate for just youth. I'm an advocate for youth that can sometimes not be able to speak for themselves, so I'm happy to be here.
Hi, my name is Stephanie Josephine Calhoun. I use she and her pronouns. I am the current Ms. Gay Pride of Portland. And I like speaking for those who have a hard time speaking for themselves. I tend to understand more of people who don't know how to speak for themselves, because I can almost just tell by looking at them, because that's how it is with myself. So yeah.
Hi, my name is Ma. should I say how old I am? I'm 21. I use she and they pronouns. A little bit about myself. I'm from St. Louis, Missouri. I've been in the Portland area for about 2.5 years. Let's see. I'm aware of like all of my intersections, and I'm aware that I'm Black, but I'm more aware that I'm human. So that's a little bit about myself.
We're a little short of microphones, so we're going to keep moving around. We're going to try not to move the microphones themselves too much because the amount of noise it brings. But Rihanna, welcome back.
Yeah, thank you for having me back.
Let's start with some of what you're working on.
Sure. Well, many things, actually. I'm currently working on many projects with Based on Rights Oregon, which is a fabulous nonprofit organization. Right now I'm working on ending profiling and the struggle and fears that come with police profiling and as a trans woman of color, and how we best approach issues that are very, very pressing when it comes to people of authority in the city of Portland. I'm also doing a lot of traveling and working on creating key points and creating more ways to advocate for many areas of intersections and also many areas that come with the LGBTQ community. I was privileged a couple weekends ago to be part of an amazing workshop that was at the HRC Time to Thrive conference, which was here located in downtown Portland at the Hilton. I really got to support talking about intersections and what is intersectionality and what does that look like and how do we encourage those that are sometimes taking over space for those that are able to come in and really open up and talk about their struggles in everyday real life, because for myself as a trans woman of color, the struggle is very real in a lot of ways. And so I guess for me, I'm just really working on how do we as a community work better with each other, and also what is the best ways to make awareness for safety tips, and how do we best make awareness for how do we approach or how do we deal with stress when we're working with the police or we're working with people of authority. And so, yeah, I'm doing a lot of amazing work. Some of it I do not know what to say at this point, but altogether, just really learning how to create community and what do we identify that as. So, yeah.
Stephanie?
Wow. Well, you know, I also had the same opportunity to attend the HRC's Time to Thrive conference on behalf of the True Colors Fund. I was nominated by some very special people for to be on the list that they put out every year, which is the 40 to None Project. So it's 40 of 40 because of, if you can help me out with these numbers here, of the population of homeless youth. Mm-hmm. 40%, is that correct? Identify on the spectrum. Is that?
Yeah, of okay. Of houseless youth that we know, yes. About 40% identify, or actually no, about 2/3 identify as LGBTQ, and of those, right. About 40% are youth of color.
Right. And so I was able, thank you for clarifying that up for me.
I got you, boo.
And so I had the opportunity to go and attend a conference, and I really got to sit in on some really good conversations that really helped broaden my eyes to realize that there is work that still needs to be done. And so I've been working in trying to figure out the best ways that I'm able to help cater to that. And so the best ways that are looking like is going to be is I'm working on a survey that I want to do in downtown Portland. And I want to put it out only to those who identify as houseless or homeless youth, or those who are experiencing housing instability. And I use a different language because it's appropriate to make sure you include everyone, however they identify their situation. And so of those who identify as homeless, housing instability, or houseless, make sure that they are people of color so that we can help identify what needs to be done from that aspect. And then specifically within those youth of color is, because that's what I'll say, my bad. Really targeting what the needs are and then help targeting, not targeting is the wrong word, help identifying what the other needs are. What are the more specific needs? What can we do as a community and what can we do as individuals to help give you that helping hand, not a handout, but a hand up, helping you help yourself. So really working with the other organizations that are already in town to just better amplify the resources and services that they've already given. And I know that there have been other surveys that have already gone out within the city and nationwide, so I'm really trying to work out the kinks so that it's not like every other survey, so that we can be more specific. That's one of them. I have a couple other projects that I'm not trying to jinx them because as my last couple months of Miss Gay Pride, you know, I'm just putting it out there. I need good energy and good vibes to make sure it all comes together. Because, like I was saying, I have just a few months left as my reign as Miss Gay Pride. I've had a fabulous year. I couldn't have asked for any more better counterparts to reign with. But as an ambassador for Pride Northwest and as one of the reflective pillars in the community, and I don't mean that conceitedly at all, is I see myself as a reflection of those who are within my community. I was just fortunate enough to be able to be that reflective pillar. I want to include the entire community and not just one specific age bracket. Mm-hmm. I tend to find that there are either events or services that are only, you know, or light is given around either the youth or what I call the bar age, which is 21 to 35. And then you have that other group that I don't really see a lot between 35 and maybe your late 40s. And then you have the older group, putting that as best as I can without offending anyone.
Our community elders.
Yeah, community elders. There we go. Yes, got it. And so really about making sure that everybody feels like they're a part of the community and not just one specific group. And really about uniting. And that's my goal. I think I've done a little bit of it so far, but I'm definitely not done yet. And so, yeah, and I'm, like I said, I'm just not trying to jinx my other projects, because if they come through, they'll be amazing. So more on that later.
Ma?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
What are you working on right now?
What am I working on?
Yeah.
So many things.
You just had a really kick-butt performance at Spectrum, I'll say that much.
Yes.
Yeah, I did Spectrum.
What was your performance?
I did a variety of things. I did a poetry piece, and then I had like this. I did an original song, and I did two cover songs with one of the performers in the back. We just met up, and we just like, she was gonna do her thing, I was gonna do my thing, but we were like, let's do a song together, and we ended up doing two, so, and going 5 minutes over, which I apologize for.
How was Spectrum overall?
It was wonderful.
This one's being modest. There were tears. They're about, like, I will say there are about 400 people in attendance at this youth music and art showcase that I was lucky enough to be a part of, and this child brought tears to at least, you know, 300 plus faces that were in the room.
You know.
It was great. You did us right. I want to pose a question to the group, because all of you are really talented advocates and educators in the community, and Rihanna, you spoke to this really well at Thrive. What is it that you wish people already knew? Like, what are you kind of sick of talking about?
Oh.
Take a minute.
Well, I think for me, I wish people would stop assuming that every trans person is the same. I can go for hours on this, but I'll shorten it really quick. Laverne said it the best, Laverne Cox. There's a fantasy infatuation with our bodies. You know, it's whether it's somebody you're seeing on a professional level, you know, romantic level, or just strictly platonic, there's always a fascination. Oh, have you had this done? Have you had that done? And even just asking what it is. It's not necessarily what they're asking, but it's how they're asking. And that's just in every aspect. You know, it's... I wish people would stop assuming that we're all the same. We're all different. Mm-hmm. You know, how is a trans person different from a snowflake? How is a trans person different from a fingerprint? No matter what, it's always going to be different. Even if you're identical twins, it's going to be different. You know? Just stop assuming. I can't put it any other way. I'm going to step back.
Do you feel like a lot of us who share multiple marginalized identities have to deal with the singular narrative problem a lot?
Oh, of course.
What do you think is a constructive way to kind of break that apart, other than telling people not to assume?
The typical rule of thumb I go when people are asking me what's the proper way to ask somebody something or whatever, if it seems like it would be a question a 5-year-old would ask, it's probably the most appropriate question you could ask, as long as it's done in the right manner. You know, instead of saying, if it's something that's supposed, how do you identify? You know, what is your pronoun? I've yet to come across somebody who identifies on the spectrum. When you ask them what their pronoun is, they don't get offended. I've seen people literally do backflips when you ask them what their pronoun is, because it made them feel good. Being sensitive enough to, like Ma said, be human and realize that we all have feelings, no matter how big or how small we are. You know, we're all, at one point in our lives, we're all tender teddy bears, and we all have feelings, and we just want to be snuggled and cuddled and not ridiculed.
Could I also add that that within our culture, it's very ill-equipped and given us tools on being able to communicate with one another without discourse. And the thing is within our language, the English language, it is a language for bartering. It's a language for business. It's a language for debate and conflict, because it's always scaling people around it or the circumstances at hand. And so it seems like we need to promote more yes ands instead of no buts. The challenge is saying yes and to everything we are experiencing in a way that doesn't diminish who we are, our value, or diminishes others, or with the intent to take away from others and to quote unquote replenish something within us, and to be confident and self-aware that all of the tools and all of the components in which we need for our own personal healing resides within here. But in order for us to come to that place, we have to come to a place of reflection and compassion above contempt, and discussion above debate.
I think I'll just well, first of all, I think that some of these thoughts are really, I think I kind of replay kind of myself and like running back through my my personal experiences. And I think that kind of what Layla was speaking on, I was privileged to be part of an amazing panel during the Time to Thrive conference and talk about intersectionality. And I guess I can kind of, I would love to just share a little bit more about like what kind of what I shared on this panel is that for Oregon, and I think for the city of Portland, there's a very large struggle of, first of all, resources for trans-identified individuals. But I think that for myself, something that I really focus on and something that is a really big struggle for me to, that I wish people would know, is that I think there's a very, very specific label on what we identify as an adult and what we identify as a youth. And I think that it's most powerful to share this message today because we have such fabulous youth leaders and advocates in this room. And something that I share a lot with others is, I'm talking about large conversations of what is a youth's role and what is an adult's role, and what do we identify as an adult and what do we identify as a youth. And I think that for the trans community, and I can only speak for myself, my experience in I'm trying to be a voice for myself and trying to speak as an advocate for trans people, is that there's a lot of shutting down when it comes to youth trying to speak up, or what we identify as quote unquote youth, and being that voice to advocate for better services or feedback on organizations that provide services for trans people in the city of Oregon, or city of Portland, excuse me. And so I think that that conversation needs to go further about like, what are we stopping for participation as a quote unquote youth, and what are we allowing to be the conversation of quote unquote adults. And so that was a large conversation that I really talked about on this panel at the Time to Thrive conference, is that, you know, for myself, I don't identify as an adult or a youth. I'm just an advocate. I am a trans person who is a voice for those that cannot be a voice for themselves. And so sometimes I walk in a room and the first thing that people think is, okay, that's a youth, so their voice is not going to be as powerful or as meaningful as an adult. But what is that? What is, how do we identify that? And so hopefully that conversation continues and can be a larger, more pressing issue, because it is a bigger issue. There's a bigger issue to what we label as power versus privilege, and what do we identify as adult versus a youth. And so it's something that needs to be worked on. It needs to be more in depth. What are the steps moving forward into those identities?
You know, and it's that's one of those things that needs to be worked on, not necessarily just out loud, but also internally. If you will. So I know, like, for me personally, it's hard for me to identify myself as a youth, because for so long I grew up with the notion, you turn 18, you're an adult, but then you're a full-fledged adult when you turn 21, because then there's only certain contracts you can sign or whatever, you can do this, do that. So when you come into services, especially, you know, within the city of Portland and some within the state of Oregon, you're a youth until you're 24 or 25. And that's, it's weird. And it's a weird feeling, in a weird sense. You know, it's like, well, everywhere else I go, I'm an adult, but here I'm a youth. So it comes down to that conversation, you know, also needs to happen within yourself. Like, how are you going to bridge that gap within yourself? Are you going to consider yourself a youth until you get to that point, or are you going to consider yourself an adult within a youth setting? So it's something I agree completely, 100%, you know, but it also needs to be recognized that it's a conversation that one needs to have with themselves, and I don't think a lot of people realize that.
Well, and I think that a lot of people do. I think that the awareness is usually brought about when it's best triggered. I think that that's what happens a lot in the community. And I'm not speaking on a more larger spectrum. I'm speaking of, you know, similar to what Ma's comment is that the English language speaks business, it speaks debate. Right. And I think that when we approach, I mean, I can only speak for myself, but as a trans woman, but more as a trans woman of color, I face the barrier when I approach and I'm part of an organization or I'm part of a conference or I'm part of, or just community, the trigger is that, oh, you're youth, and so your voice doesn't matter. And so that's the trigger. It's like, mm-hmm. okay, so then I would go internally of like, well, what do you mean? Like, what is that to you and what is that to me? And so the identity is very different. And so the English language, from my experience, and speaking of what an adult role is and what a youth, it's very clear to what people want it to be. But mm-hmm. the reality is that, you know, there's questions of like, what is my role, you know?
Right.
May I also say, like, I feel like what I'm hearing is a lot about reevaluating, like, these terms and these words in the unspoken expectations that are associated with them. For me personally, as a person who I still use services from the Homeless Youth Continuum. As we speak, and what I have noticed is that they do a lot of focusing on helping these people or youth sort of gain skills to work in the world in aspects of financial stability and all of these things. But I think it's only like half the work, right? Because I think a lot of youth need tools for interpersonal skills, mm-hmm. how to have conflict resolution mm-hmm. skills. Because if they're in the workplace, if they don't have good conflict resolution skills, then how can they develop as human beings? And so they're addressing a lot of the external needs without really focusing on the internal dynamics on why the external needs are need. And which brings me back to what I would hope. What was the question? What I would hope that other.
What do you wish that people knew that you didn't have to keep re-explaining?
Oh, yeah. What I wish that people knew that didn't have to keep explaining. As I said before, that that as human beings, Maya Angelou says that we are more alike than we are unalike. And like you were saying about this language, and I was saying about this language, there's a lot of labels associated with who we are and how people interact with us in the world in which we see the lens around us. But I think a lot of things I get tired of, sort of exhausted from speaking about, is the combative language of feminist groups and culture. It's quite interesting to me how a lot of these languages, like the word, like a lot of words sound very combative. I think when I hear the word privilege, sometimes I don't know, I just think about certain vocabulary as tactics to attack the overall system without first reevaluating how we are helping perpetuate it and how we are a part of the organism itself. And so in attempts to point our finger and say this group has this and I'm without, or this group has this and I take, I think we are ignoring our impact, the negative impact that we have on others around us, from not speaking about the truth on how we are also oppressors in a certain dynamic or another. And so, as I was saying last time I was here on the radio, what Andre Lorde said is, you can't expect to destroy the master's house with the master's tools, right? Mm-hmm. And so with that quote, what I heard from my experience is that as people who are revolutionizing their communities, it's important, it's imperative that we have a conversation about the tools in which we're using, like the language, like the vocabulary. A lot of feminist vocabulary can be very alienating to people, and it's almost ironic how so many of the people in which we want to encourage to invite in are sort of called out to be invited in. Why is it called out? Why don't we start calling people in? The intention is so that we can share a vision together. Not that we can debate whose vision is better or what works, you know, or what works, or what's more efficient. I think what's more efficient is when we have the ability to say yes and to things that we don't necessarily agree about, and find a way to create connection, because there's a thin, there's a very thin thread that connects us all as human beings, and it becomes void when we choose to invest in the idea that that we are separate and that we are disconnected, and that is an illusion. So how can we re-examine the idea of connection, which is abundant around us?
Can I put a caveat on that? Well, no, because I was actually just having a conversation with some other folks about this earlier today, about drawing the difference between mainstream white feminism and intersectional feminism, and how, like, second wave feminism, second and third wave feminism kind of does feel like that, like attacking and calling out and kind of demonizing people rather than, you know, being intersectional and calling people in and noticing that we do have more in common than we do have different, and, you know, trying to make a space for everybody at the table and realize that there is a spot for everybody in this revolution and we need to call each other in. Yeah, so I just want to touch on that, because that's something I've been talking about a lot lately with the whole Oscars, like, Patricia Arquette rigmarole.
Oh, right. Yes.
That's all I'll say on that. I'll step back.
if anybody wants to speak to that, or we can.
I mean, I guess I don't know if I want to speak to that, just because there's a lot going through my head about that. But I think that in general, I just had a conversation with a friend of mine about, like, pop culture in general, and about are we doing enough to bring awareness to the trans community? And one of the main examples that was really talked about, and actually it was another talk radio show that I was speaking about this, is about the Glee episode and the 200 group Glee choir of all trans people, but also talking about Alex Newell, and specifically how Alex Newell really sent a beautiful message and still continues to do so. And the question that was approached to me was, you know, in pop culture and in media in general, are we doing enough to create awareness? The answer is no, but we are moving. Right, it's a very obvious response to that. But
the fact that you had to ask that question tells us no.
Right, so no, we are not doing enough, but we are definitely making steps. And I think that some of those steps need to come from very, very big, you know, celebrities, as we so call, or people in our community. And I think that, you know, Laverne Cox has always been my number one role model. And I think that, you know, outside of that, hearing it from people that we least expect it from, has been an amazing experience for me to kind of witness and to kind of follow on both media and perspective and what individuals are thinking on that. So I'm excited that media and pop culture are now really allowing themselves to know that whatever power and privilege they think they have, they are allowing to use that for more beneficial reasons. So, yeah.
Definitely. But to piggyback off of that, I definitely have seen a rise in trans-identified characters and or screenplays. Some to come to mind are Transparent. I'm going to go ahead and say Bruce Jenner with the whole Kardashian clan. Yeah. That's a big one, and I've been following that one really closely. It's actually been quite interesting. And then Laverne Cox, she'll be starting this fall as the first out trans person on a primetime, is that what it is?
Yeah, really
something fabulous like
is that.
Like I don't
Law
even
and
know.
Order or something? Like,
huh?
What is it?
She'll be an attorney.
Okay.
She's going to be a trans woman of color herself. Attorney. And it's going to be on CBS. And she's the first to do it. She blazed the trail when she came on the scene as, you know, Sophia Brissette from Orange is the New Black. Orange is the New Black is another one. And, you know, Glee definitely, I think, started to bridge that gap between the adult media and the youth media. Because Glee is set in that high school setting, and there are plenty of trans youth in this country. You know, I started as one of them, you know, and so for them, for a show of that magnitude to have not one but two trans identified characters who come together and who support each other, you know, and then just having that choir, oh yes, it was everything, you know. But it's definitely been a rise and the visibility of trans people within the media. Yeah. Is it enough? Absolutely not. You know, it won't be enough until Laverne Cox has won at least seven Oscars. You know, I mean, but it's definitely getting there. But I do think that it's, people are coming around.
Yeah. You know? May I also, can I just say that, I'm sorry, just on a different note, just about the awareness of trans women of color, since seeing as how we're all here as trans women of color right now, and the struggle is real, like as you said, in the demographics and the statistics of what happens to trans women of color in this country is shocking. So yeah, I would encourage every listener right now, if you can invest any of your time of the day to research, stories and the things that happen to trans women of color every day in this country, mm-hmm. even if you want to include the world, actually, right. All you have to do is just Google it, just mm-hmm. one phrase,
right.
You know what
just
I'm saying?
Just one phrase, and there's plenty, you know, it's just, sorry.
Don't forget who started Stonewall.
Don't
forget who started Stonewall.
Well, I know that we're running short on time, and I just want to just really quick say a last comment on Layla's question, just because I know that we have fabulous youth in here that are advocates and work towards creating change in our communities. And I think the last thing that I'll say that I hope that I don't have to continuously keep repeating over and over again, but because my idea was when we came in here to talk about, I really hope that those that are listening and those in our community will understand that my situation and my identity or my intersections doesn't make limitations for me being successful in life. And I think that is a very large, like we talked about the lenses, it's a very large thing that people